This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. And if I say teacher, you are likely to imagine a person standing in front of a classroom, writing on a chalkboard, calling on students, a person writing lesson plans, meeting with parents, and grading papers. But what about a teacher as a leader? The Center for Teaching Quality in Carrboro is trying to create just such a person and just such an image and give it a name, Teacherpreneur. Barnett Berry is the founder and CEO of the Center for Teaching Quality. He joins us now. Welcome, Barnett. Good to have you here.
Good afternoon, Frank. Great to be here.
Sarah Henchy is a sixth grade teacher. She teaches language arts at A.L. Standback Middle School in Hillsboro and is a teacherpreneur. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
So, Barnett, what is a teacherpreneur?
Oh, it's just as the word suggests, a classroom expert who teaches children regularly, but has time, space, and reward to incubate and execute their own ideas, a kind of brand of teacher leadership that we think is much needed for the schools of today and tomorrow.
So how does that work? You get a year off, you're on sabbatical, how does it go?
Well, what we're trying to do as a small nonprofit based right here in North Carolina, as we raise the revenue from foundations and states and perhaps even one day some school districts, to purchase part of a teacher's time, help the school district or so, the school, figure out how teachers can work in teams so that the teacher who's would be teaching children, say, from 7:30 in the morning to 3 p.m. or even later in the course of a day, has a much more flexible schedule. So they teach part of that day, maybe 3-4 hours, maybe a little bit less, but have time to conduct policy research, to lead the Common Core reforms, to write, to blog, to work with colleagues on professional development and so forth.
And Sarah, you've been doing some of that. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your year. What have you been looking into, and how does that work out for you on the ground?
So I had the great opportunity last year to be a teacherpreneur who was on full-time release as a teacher in residence. And during that time, I was charged with helping to really advocate for a teacher-led implementation of the Common Core state standards. And I was able to do so at both a North Carolina level as well as a national level. The flexibility that I had helped me speak, have opportunities to speak to the press that I never would have had before, opportunities to speak with funders, chances to really start to rally groups of teachers and hear about their needs and then facilitate and organize events that would meet those needs in ways that then went back to their students in their classrooms.
Here's some irony for you, Frank. One of Sarah's great accomplishments last year was to help incubate and launch a virtual learning community for teacher leaders around the Common Core in the state of Kentucky before she even started helping us get the work going in North Carolina.
So what's the value of that?
Well, first of all, there's expert teachers everywhere in this country, and this thing called the internet, first of all, can help us, or better yet, help them spread their ideas to each other in exponential ways, irrespective of time and space.
So what did you learn from that, Sarah?
I think one of the greatest things I learned was and I've thought about this a lot throughout the year, and I think that I'm now 2 months back returning into the classroom. And so I think as the year unfolds, I'll have even more of those moments that help me go, oh, wow. But two big takeaways I've had is, number one, as a profession, I'd like teachers to do a better job of inserting their voices, or at least helping people understand how to find them. It was amazing the number of organizations that I spoke to who couldn't seem to get a teacher to lend them an ear because they didn't know how to broach that group.
Well, let me get an example of this. So implementing core curriculum standards, right? So we've been hearing a lot about this, a fair amount of controversy about it. How do they – so you're talking about giving teachers a voice. Mm-hmm. So how would they be implemented if teachers didn't have a voice? I mean, how does it work, and what would this teacher voice, teacher advocate who's done some research, mm-hmm, and facilitated conversations, how would that change the way they might be implemented otherwise?
And so I think the danger that we tend to run when – we do not have a classroom practitioner at the table really leading the work, or at least co-leading in a way, is we are not meeting the needs of our current diverse population. Rather, it's something that can be often targeted towards the middle. And there are opportunities then to add in a layer up or a layer down, but we're not actually looking at what our classrooms today look like, the needs our students have, and how those needs fit together, not only within the same classroom, but also across classrooms. One of the great things about the Common Core State Standards is it encourages interdisciplinary learning. And a way to do that is actually to get a group of teachers around the table and have them talk about that overlap. And that's not something that anyone besides classroom practitioners has the actual expertise or experience to do.
Yeah, our school schedules, Frank, our curriculum, our testing system would look a lot different if we had more teachers who are literally teaching kids every day inserted into the decision-making process. Not at the exclusion of other administrators and other very smart people in the education world, but we definitely need far more teachers involved in both policy and pedagogical reform.
And part of the problem isn't it that a teacher to ascend, to move up the pay level, right, has to go into administration. So you might take a great teacher out of the classroom into administration because the only way I can reward you.
Right, exactly. And once the teacher leaves the classroom, it doesn't take long before he or she loses his or her pedagogical touch and loses credibility with their colleagues. The most trusted source for any idea or mm-hmm. new approach in education by a teacher is another teacher.
So, and I guess another problem in all of this and inherent in this is that teachers never get a chance to talk to each other, right? You're in your silo, and then it's 4 o'clock, and it's time to go. It is time to go. So this offers that opportunity, not necessarily for each teacher, but for the teacherpreneur to be able to organize these kind of conferences.
Exactly. And so one thing that I had the opportunity to do last year was to launch, along with actually two of my colleagues in Florida and Colorado, two additional states who are working to implement the Common Core State Standards, was launch a webinar series that got teachers together at 7 p.m. Eastern, allowing our colleagues on the West Coast to join as well. And that really opened up a ton of doors of conversations. We pulled in classroom experts, and then we turn to the experts that were on the webinar, classroom teachers. We also had parents and engaged citizens joining us for those webinars because they were interested in knowing more and just needed some sort of pipeline with which to do so.
And this is, I guess, whenever you try to impose a standard, the big trade-off is, look, if I say everybody in fourth grade needs to know this, any classroom teacher knows they've got two or four kids who are just going to get it. They're going to get it in sixth grade. Now what do I do? On the other hand, if you allow too much subjectivity, frankly, it's part of this school-to-prison pipeline. We're seeing kids channeled for reasons the teacher didn't even know. Elements of discrimination and subjectivity entering into this. It strikes me that this might be one way to gather teachers so they can address both of those. How do we expand our scope so that standards don't penalize kids who are going to be learners at a different rate, and at the same time examine our own subjectivity?
What we know about, Frank, top-performing nations in the world, they tend to give teachers well, first of all, they make sure all of them are well-prepared before they begin to teach. There's no such thing as alternative certification in top-performing nations like Finland and Singapore. But they also give teachers a whole lot more time to both teach and lead. The average teacher in Singapore and Finland might teach anywhere from 12 to 15 hours a week in front of children. And the other part of their 50-hour work week, which is comparable to the average American teacher, is involved in curriculum reform, writing textbooks, even working on assessments, and so forth. We need to do the same here in this country, giving teachers much more opportunity to both teach and lead.
All right, but what about this? Teachers are already overworked, and now you're going to add to their burden,
well,
aren't you?
But here's what. In this country of ours, we have 6.2 million educators in the K-12 school system, both at the district level and at the school level. Only 3.1 million of them actually teach children. In those top-performing nations that I just described, anywhere from 60 to 80% of all educators teach something so excellent teachers like Sarah can lead something else.
We'll talk about that, Sarah, from your point of view. I mean, does it sound to you and to other teachers like what you're really asking them to do is speed up, do more work?
Well, I think that we're actually then making the assumption that it's false, that teachers aren't already doing more work. And so when we think about the amount of work we're doing as a finite element, we're missing a key piece, which is the benefit, the cost benefit of the work we're doing, and how can we work smarter so that the work that we're doing and the time that we're devoting is actually having that direct impact on our student instruction. And sometimes having that direct impact on our student instruction means not being in front of students, but being with my colleagues and looking and saying, this is what meeting this standard looks like. How can we get students who aren't meeting the standard to that level? And those are resources that some districts have and some districts don't, but all teachers have the training and the expertise in order to have that conversation. They just need that time and opportunity.
So how does Teacherpreneur expand or scale up? Is this something that you have to do on a district-by-district basis? Is it a building-by-building kind of question?
Well, it's a great question. I think for our nonprofit, which is, as I said, based here in North Carolina, but we're doing work now across the country and soon across the world, our job is to make teacher leaders more well-known. So my colleagues, Ann Bird and Alan Weeder, and I have just put together a book entitled Teacherpreneurs, where we profile eight extraordinary teachers, extraordinary teachers all across the country who are doing this work. They are exceptional, but not the exception, Frank, and we're trying to make them more well-known to begin with. The other is we're trying to put together some tools to demonstrate the larger impact that this type of leadership has, not just on classrooms and the students that teachers like Sarah will teach, but also on colleagues and how the students of other teachers can improve much more rapidly when they have greater access to exceptional teaching from their colleagues.
What does this take from a budget standpoint? Do we have to change how much we spend on schools?
Oh, that's a great question. I think more than that, I think schools are very much underfunded, especially in many communities all across this country. So I do not want to suggest that we don't need additional resources for this, Frank. But I do think we can look very hard at how we do spend the resources we have. That number I just gave you before, only half of the educators in this country actually teach children. So 3.1 million out of 6.2 million. Why can't we have a greater proportion of that 6.2 million educators teach some of the time so that we can have our best teachers spread their expertise?
And that's what we're seeing now in industry anyway, particularly in high-tech businesses, much more sort of symmetrical authority and less hierarchical, and the more successful businesses in the modern age are doing that. So it strikes me that even if you have a business concept of schools, that you would get to this less hierarchical form.
Yeah, the irony is that when we hear schools ought to operate more like businesses, oftentimes we take that for, well, maybe we ought to be operating businesses of the 1950s opposed to the second half of the second decade of the 21st century.
Right. You don't want to be running your business like GM because that's about to go under. So really looking at the businesses that are less hierarchical and more symmetrical in terms of their relationships might be the way to go. But you just got back from Singapore, and in fact there is – is there not a larger commitment to public education in a place like Singapore?
There is. There's no question. Education spending in Singapore just ranks right behind their defense. It's a small country, about 6 million people, of course. We know that. But 31 states in America, about the same size as Singapore. They have about 500,000 children. They spend about $10.6 billion on those 500,000 children, and the results speak for themselves. But most importantly, the reason they say they their kids do as well as they do is because the investment they've made in teachers and teaching. And here's the thing that really is the killer, though. When you ask them where do they learn their ideas about teacher education or professional development or assessment reform or how do we teach mathematics, guess where they say they learned it? In America. But they'll tell you point blank, Americans just do not know how to execute what they know how to do, and they let politics get in the way. And we in Singapore know how to execute.
Sarah, let me ask you as a practical question. You're out of the classroom for a year and then go back. Does it make you rusty? Did you worry going back?
I was a little anxious. It felt like my first year of teaching all over again, which is any teacher can tell you is not necessarily something you want to repeat. I was surprised, though. The muscle memory of teaching is pretty strong. I will say, though, that to speak to Barnett's earlier point, that to have that credibility is to be the person who has heard their name called 100 times and still replies politely and patiently to the 101th child who does it. And that's something that only teachers really experience. And so when you're having those collegiate relationships, it's a true key. I think one thing that really stuck out to me, and this goes back to the point about the business model, is having that year away from the classroom and then returning to this place has really helped me see myself and my role in a different sense. So previously, there is this idea of education being a machine. And so you almost feel like a cog in that machine. And what I actually was able to step outside and see from a whole different level was it's more of a microcosm. We're actually we're creating a culture for learning. And it's not just teachers and administrators and people within a school who are doing it, but even as a whole society, we're creating it. And we all have a role there in how we actually create the conditions under which students can learn. And it's very different of a mindset than anything that would be more machine related. And I do see that as a shift that we want to push forward.
So we're seeing this is the second time this has come up, the industrial model mm-hmm. of school, whether it's in the administration and the organization of administration or even in the way we think about the way education works, can't be mechanical or industrial. So that's one change of mind that you suggest might have to happen. Is there anything else at root of this? And I'm thinking about the possibility that because we associate teaching as a gendered profession, mm-hmm. we associate it with women, is there some reason that we might not expect women to be leaders and expect mm-hmm. them to be administrators because of gender roles?
I would certainly, a large part of me would like to say, I would hope that's not true. And yet I know that change takes time and it takes examples. And so as we continue to talk to our children and be mindful of even the gender pronouns that we use when we describe different roles that they may achieve, I think that that's just something that's going to be a gradual shift. Yet I do see opportunities for that the more female leaders that we have.
I do think, Frank, that this gender issue is still at play here in the United States. I don't think this concept would be as difficult to implement and sell if teaching was not a predominantly female profession. In other countries where you see the teaching profession much more respected and teacher leadership more pronounced, you'll find overall in the society greater respect for women. And Finland's a great example on that score.
And it might be fair to say that the industrial economy itself developed as a kind of was a gendered proposition, one that mm-hmm. preferred men to women. And maybe all of that is starting to change now. So is this catching on, do you think?
Well, yes. Let me tell you why. First of all, we do have this year, we're funding six teacherpreneurs, one in Washington, one in Colorado, two in Florida, one in Arizona, and, oh, goodness, am I going to forget somebody?
Kentucky.
Oh, one in Kentucky, mm-hmm. of course. In fact, again, Sarah's work last year helped us incubate the idea in Kentucky. In fact, in Kentucky, the work is supported by the state, not necessarily a foundation. In the other locations where we're supporting teacherpreneurs, the good graces of philanthropy are helping us pay the bill, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's catching on. My colleague Ann Bird and I are going to Iowa next week. They just passed some major legislation to support teacher leadership and a new way to compensate teachers. And they're very interested in how to cultivate teacherpreneurs as part of their model. So I think it's beginning to catch on, but we have a lot to catch up on relative to other countries.
Thank both of you for being on the program. Barnett Berry is the founder and CEO of the Center for Teaching Quality and one of the authors of the book Teacherpreneurs. And Sarah Henschy is a sixth grade teacher in language arts at A.L. Stanback Middle School in Hillsboro. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Find out more about teacherpreneurs at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a travel guide to the monster-filled underworld. Stay with us.